And I'll leave you with one of the things I'm proud of that book is I wrote kind of a manifesto. Mm. It's not a long manifesto, but here it is. Your brand today is no longer what you tell people it is. It is the differentiated experience your employees deliver. It's what you stand for and how your customers feel. And most importantly, your brand is what your customers and employees tell others about their experience. All else is derivative of that and only that.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network. Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, to Learn, Speak, Teach. Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. If you love to learn, be inspired, and succeed, we're here to speak and teach. I'm your host, Ben Albert. I believe if you're not living, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're withering. And if you're not engaged, you can turn this off right now. Because we here at LST are lifelong learners. And listen, I'm not your guru. I'm an ordinary guy on a journey to learn from the experts. My goal is to host each conversation with a beginner's mindset. Learn and let the experts speak and teach their truths. Join us. Oh yeah, and don't forget to subscribe. This episode is brought to you completely free. Get some stake in the game here. My fee for the show only takes a few moments. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Bonus points. Please leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right, let's get started. Welcome, everyone, once again to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with Stan Phelps. Stan, what's up, man? Happy to be with you.
Yeah, great to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Dude, I'm excited for it. I just read one of your books, Pink Goldfish. We'll get into that in a moment. But I'm saying this honestly. I'm not just saying it because you're here across the mic from me. Probably one of the best top 10 marketing books I've read. So it's kick ass.
Wow, that's high praise. And I know you read a fair amount. So,
you know, what's funny is I don't read a lot of marketing books. I do have a marketing company, but yours really stood out to me. I bought the audio and the ebook. So, you and what's your co-author's name again?
David Rendell.
You and David read to me the entire time, which was fantastic. I just had to follow along.
And you told me this great technique, which I'd never thought of, is when you have the ebook, it's literally you listen, but you follow along, which I think solves the biggest challenge. I'm big on audiobooks, but it's hard to make notes. It's hard to, you sometimes can lose track if you're just listening. So I think that's a great technique, listening and reading at the same time.
You know, it's fantastic. Sometimes 1.25 to 2x is a good speed. Depends on the speed of the reader and the audiobook. And you can just get through books with concentration quick. I will tell this to any listener. One thing that's been happening to me is I haven't been reading it lately. I'll start texting and then I'll scroll to find my slot. It's easy to get distracted if you treat it as a podcast. However, right, if you treat it as like, if you read along with the audio, for me, the retention's incredible. So I could recite about 12 chapters of the book off the top of my head.
Right. You know, I know we're going to get off on a, I don't want to get off on a tangent.
I started the tangent. Don't worry.
There is science behind this. They call that dual coding.
Dual coding.
So typically I talk about it more in terms of communication, Ben. So when you're speaking, and I speak for a living, and you say something that's, you know, relevant, people, if they're just hearing you, that's single coding, if they're just hearing you, they recall about 10% like weeks later. But here's the thing. If there is a compelling image in addition to hearing it. So a slide that's really impactful, right? A compelling image, it jumps to 65%.
Mm.
So that's a, I tell people, do you have to use slides when you speak? I'm like, no, not if you don't want people to remember what you've said. So you're using that dual coding, and I'm not sure how the reading, but engaging both senses is definitely going to boost the recall.
Ooh, that's fantastic. And anyone listening, if you go to the, unless you're on my website, if you go to the description or the show notes and go to the website, realbusinessconnections.com/episode Stan Phelps or whatever it is, we will have the audio. We will have basically a timestamp, and there's an infographic or a quote for every episode. So I encourage people to go check that out so you can see the quote, you can listen, and you can jump around if you want to use the timestamp. So that's helpful. To get back on track, gang, I want to introduce this gentleman. He needs a proper introduction. Stan Phelps is an author, a keynote speaker, and a workshop facilitator. He works with organizations that want to increase loyalty, sales, and word of mouth through brand, customer, and employee experience. His in-person and virtual programs stand out in a sea of sameness by providing differentiating. One thing that I think is super cool, and I read Pink Goldfish, Stan has created a rainbow of, I believe, 9 goldfish. And let's start there. What do I mean, Stan, when I say a rainbow of about 9 goldfish?
So there's 11 different colors.
There's 11.
Yeah, 11. So it all started back in 2012. So just over a decade ago, purple goldfish was the first in the series. And goldfish is just merely a metaphor, Ben, for growth via differentiation.
Why goldfish?
Yeah, so the goldfish is a little bit personal to me. So do you remember your first pet?
Yeah. Her name was Storm, German Shepherd Doberman mix.
So your dog was your first pet. For me, it was when I was 6 years old. I went to a carnival and I threw that ping pong ball and I came home with my very first pet, which was a goldfish. And his name was Oscar. And I remember that he was pretty small, and it turns out that the average goldfish only grows to be about 3 to 3.5 inches. Some grow to be less and some grow to be bigger. Well, come to find out that the biggest goldfish in the world, now it's not a carp or a koi, the biggest, you know, average common ordinary goldfish in the world is nearly 19 inches. Now think about that for a second. You know, that would be like you walking out of your house or your apartment and bumping into somebody who's 6 times your size, like 3 stories tall. And that intrigued me. And I said, why is it that some goldfish, you know, grow to be average or even less than average, and some grow to be these monster size? And it turns out, Ben, that there's 5 reasons why that goldfish will grow. But those same 5 reasons apply to you, Ben, and to everyone who's listening right now. And I'll rock it through them. Most people have heard the first one, which is for a goldfish, the size of the bowl or the pond. So the bigger the bowl, the bigger the pond, the more they grow.
Mm.
And in business, the size of the bowl or the pond is simply the market for your product or service, right? And the bigger the market that you serve, the more obviously bigger you can get. The second one is sounds pretty self-evident, but for a goldfish, their growth is also impacted by the amount of other goldfish in the bowl or the pond. And this one's an inverse relationship. Hmm. So the more goldfish there are, the harder it is to grow. Who are the other goldfish? Just your competition.
Right.
Right. And the more competition you have, the harder it's going to be to grow. The third reason was it was the most difficult till March of 2020 for people to get. And so if you're a goldfish, your growth is also impacted by the quality of the water, that surrounding environment. And the better that environment is, the more you can grow. And so this one, you have to think a little bit macro. Mm-hmm. What is that? If you're in business, it's simply the economy, right? It's all those things out there that you have no control over. Tariffs, regulations, interest rates,
sure.
Right? The ability to access capital, global pandemics, supply chain, right? So that's number three, the economy. Number four is how that goldfish does, Ben, in its first 4 months is absolutely key. So they're tiny when they're born.
Mm.
In fact, you call a baby goldfish a fry, as in small fry. And so how you get out of the gate when you're born as a goldfish is absolutely key to your future growth. And so what are you called in business your first 4 months? Well, most would call you like a startup.
Sure.
Right? As you're starting up. Or same thing, when you offer a new product or service, how it does in that critical first few months will be an indicator of how big it will get. The fifth one is genetic makeup. So whatever a goldfish is born with, how strong their genes are, how they are separated from everyone else, will determine ultimately how big they get. And the stronger their genes are, the more they grow. If their genes are weak and they're like all of the other goldfish, typically their growth gets stunted. And so we talked about the market, mm-hmm. competition, the economy, how you do as a startup, how differentiated you are. And so what I tell people is, if we're being honest, if you've already been in business for more than 4 months, no one listening has control over the market, their competition, let alone the economy,
mm-hmm.
right? The only thing you control is how you differentiate. And I would challenge you, not just what you do, because if we're being honest, it's hard to differentiate in terms of what we offer, but you can differentiate in how you do it and why you do it. And that became the crux of the first book, was called The Purple Goldfish, was the idea of differentiating through the experience that you provide. And how could you stand out, and how could you drive that loyalty and word of mouth?
It's big on the how and the why and the differentiation you create there. Give us an example of, again, a human, but 20, 30, 60 feet tall, multiple stories high. Give us an example of a business that is one of those massive goldfish, and maybe a little bit about how and why they got to that huge size.
Yeah. So, I mean, especially if you're in a business that is a commodity, right? The importance of standing out and differentiating the experience is absolutely key. So, let's talk about hotels for a second.
Sure.
I'll give you two examples. Part of the goldfish was also inspired by a hotel chain called Kimpton Hotels.
Kimpton.
Now, okay. The trick is, none of them are called Kimpton. It's kind of the parent organization. They're all boutique hotels, so they all have different names. The Hotel Monaco would be the one that probably people might recognize.
Heard of it.
And there's maybe like 100 of them. It's not like a massive chain. But they are really differentiate. They get the guest experience. They do a lot of little things, Ben. So if you're staying at a Kimpton, there's gourmet coffee for free in the lobby. They do wine tasting in the afternoon. I brought my dog once. They don't charge you extra. They treated my dog like he was a king.
Yes.
He was totally spoiled. They'll let you take a bike if you're in a lot of them are in cities, so you can take a bike and go and tour the city for free. But here's the thing. If you're staying, they used to do this. If you're staying at a Kimpton and maybe you're getting a little lonely, some of the Kimptons would give you a pet goldfish for your stay.
Yeah.
And so I tell people, you know, imagine that happened. They encourage you to name your goldfish. And it's like, how could you not tell like all of your friends? And when you get back to work and you're around the water cooler or today the digital, you know, or posted on Instagram, like you're telling others about that experience, that signature thing that they do. So that's one example. For the original book, Ben, for Purple, Little Things That You Do for Your Customers, I collected over 1,001 examples.
Wow.
And it, so people would send me examples. I would write it about them. People would send me more. And we're on hotels. The one that really stands out is, have you ever stayed at a DoubleTree
hotel before? Yeah, I believe so.
So what's their little extra that they do when you're checking in?
I'm not sure.
So it's a warm chocolate chip cookie, individually wrapped, pretty good size.
No wonder my girlfriend always wants to do the checking in. I didn't realize.
She's like, "Oh, go and get the bags. I'll check in and get the." No, it's amazing. In fact, I'll tell you.
Yeah,
it's so they've been doing it since the 1980s. And back then it was common for like, you know, VIPs to get kind of special gifts or cookies. And they're like, every one of our guests is like a VIP. And so I love it as this little thing that they do. And I'll share a story. So do you know who Jeff Hazlett is?
I do not. So Jeff, I'm striking Jeff, out today. I'm striking out. Jeff Hazlett.
No worries. You're only 0-2. So Jeff used to be years ago, used to be the CMO of Kodak. And so author, fellow speaker, he's a Hall of Fame speaker. He's amazing. He told me once, he said he loves the DoubleTree chocolate chip cookies so much. He says he dreams about them when he stays at other hotels. They're that good. So they've given away now like half a billion cookies. And it's become the signature thing that separates DoubleTree from a lot of other kind of commodity hotel properties.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow. And I should have known him because I'm from Rochester, New York, where Kodak's from, but that's a side note, gang. I, in a second, want to get into, you mentioned there's 11 colored goldfish.
Right.
And so you've written a lot of books on this marketing differentiating. You've taken in thousands upon thousands of case studies. I want to get into that, specifically pink goldfish, in a moment.
Sure.
But to slow down, to speed up, I imagine you didn't just roll out of bed with this brilliant concept and a perfect metaphor and then just spit 11 books out in the, you know, in a cat nap amount of time.
No.
Let's lead back to, and I'd love if you could share a point of difficulty, but what were you doing before you had this goldfish realization and really started kicking ass and reinventing your career? Tell us a little bit about the history of Stan.
Yeah, so thank you. So I worked for 2 decades in marketing. So marketing was my background. I started my career working on the agency side in sports for a group called IMG, International Management Group. And then I went from there and I spent just about 9 years working with Adidas. So I worked in Portland, which is the U.S. headquarters, in New York, where I managed our partnership with the New York Yankees and actually worked out of the stadium. And my last stint with them was overseas, living in Amsterdam, managing kind of global sports marketing and tennis. I went from there to work in golf for a while with the PGA of America. And then I went back to the agency side, where for about 8 years, I worked with a group called Synergy. And Synergy, Ben, was about creating kind of experiences. We would do sponsorship activations. We would do PR stunts, product launches, mobile marketing tours. And what's funny, mobile marketing meaning like a vehicle that goes from city to city. Now, it had nothing to do with your phone, right?
Yes.
Like event marketing or experience, they call it experiential marketing. And what I realized back in like 2006 and 7, when social was coming into the forefront, that marketing was changing so dramatically. And the type of marketing that I was doing, even though it was effective and it was fun, probably wasn't the best marketing. All I knew, Ben, was I was part of the problem and I had no idea what the solution was.
Mm.
And so
not to cut you off, but what do you mean? Give us like a tangible example of something that was prevalent at the time that wasn't going to be. Is there an example of that?
Well, I just think now the customer has so much more access to information and reviews, and they have a platform and a microphone, right? Whereas if you go back, you only have to go back less than two decades, and it was the TV industrialization complex, right? Mm-hmm. People bought ads, they told you what the product was, all the great features, right? And people would buy those products and they would use that to buy more ads. And it just, fed on itself. If you had a problem or an issue with a product, beyond going to like the Better Business Bureau or writing a letter to Ralph Nader to complain, you didn't have an avenue. You didn't have a voice, really.
Right.
And so, I really saw how important it was, to create that great experience that gives people a reason to talk about you as an organization. And what I learned, Ben, and it seems self-evident because you ask people, you go, what's the best form of marketing that you have? Over 90% of the people say what?
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth, right? Word of mouth, absolutely. Referrals are absolutely gold. It's the best part of marketing. And friend and fellow author, in fact, he wrote the foreword for Pink 2.0, mm-hmm. Jay Baer has done research on this, and I'll ask companies, they'll follow up and go, well, what's your word of mouth strategy? What percentage of companies, Ben, have a word of mouth strategy?
Less than 10.
1%.
1%.
Right. Absolutely, people understand this. I used to think as a traditional marketer, you would spend all this time and energy to get somebody in the funnel, right? And then work them down the funnel and hopefully convert them. And I used to think, well, yeah, it's great to get referrals, but they've got to be roughly the same value as that referred customer, right? And it's not even close. No. That referred customer is upwards of 4 times more valuable to you than that traditionally acquired customer, right? So they stay longer, they spend more money, up to twice the amount of money as a traditionally acquired customer. And here's the thing, since they've been referred themselves, Ben, what are they more apt to do?
Refer.
Refer and tell other people, up to twice the amount over their lifetime.
Hmm.
So it's not even close. I tell people, until organizations spend 51% of their time, I'm not saying they have to spend all of their time on the experience that they provide, but until they dedicate 51% of their marketing budget towards creating that great experience, my work won't be done.
Mm.
So to get back to your question, I created some crazy stunty type of product launches. Things like creating the world's largest logo and a 70-foot tall M&M that I put on a barge and floated into New York Harbor. I rebuilt the original Starbucks for one day to launch Pike Place Road. I mean, I did crazy stuff. And all I realized was that stuff was successful, but it wasn't scalable and it wasn't sustainable. And I thought there had to be a better way And I literally 13 years ago, 2009, almost 13 years ago to the day, I'm at a rooftop bar in Manhattan and I'm with a colleague. We're about to go to a networking event. And I had a conversation with this older gentleman who was waiting for someone to show up at the bar. And he was on his own for like a half hour. And I felt bad for him. So I just leaned in to start conversation. And we started talking about the etiquette of being on time, right? And waiting. And I probably shared a quote that my dad had probably taught me about Vince Lombardi time, or, you know, the importance of being early and being on time. And this older gentleman, Ben, looked me in the eye and he said, no. He said, no one is ever on time. And I went, wait a second. I've been on time before. I go, not often, but I've been on time. And he put his finger in my face and gave me the Dikembe finger wave. And he said, no. He said, in fact, and he doubled down. He's like, got in my face. He's like, on time is a myth. He said, people in life, right, are either early or they're late. He said, no one is ever just on time. It's impossible. Right. And I took the train home. I was living in Connecticut at the time. And I thought to myself, I go, God, that same thing applies to the customers we serve each and every day. Right. No one that's listening right now, Ben, has ever just exactly met the expectations of a customer that they served.
Right.
Right. You either exceed their expectations or you fall short.
Even if it just by a sliver.
Yeah. And so given the choice of doing a little more or a little less, that's when I started that project where I looked for businesses that purposefully did little things to stand out and to do a little bit more to enhance the experience that they provided. And that led me on the journey. It took 27 months to collect all 1,001 examples.
Wow. You mentioned those little things, and everybody has, you know, a motivational quote up. We're here to exceed customer expectations, service right. with a smile. Service with a smile is not a bad thing. You want happy-go-lucky people, but is it service with a smile, or are there other little things that, let's say everybody's providing service with a smile?
Right.
How do we differentiate right. from everybody providing service with a smile? What little things can we do?
So I looked across the 1,000+, and essentially there's 10 ways you can do it. And so, and there's kind of two categories, Ben. So there's five things that you do that I call the value stuff that you do. So there are things that kind of get added, like that chocolate chip cookie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody stays at a hotel and got disappointed because they didn't get a goldfish, right? Or a chocolate chip cookie. That's an above and beyond.
Yes.
So five on the value side of the equation and five on what I call the maintenance side of the equation. And so maintenance is about what is it like for me to do business with you? How much effort do I have to put out? How easy do you make it for me? So on that side, it's things like what little things that you do to be more convenient to do business? How do you handle waiting? Right? How do you follow up and say thank you? How do you handle mistakes? And on the value side of the equation, it's what little things are you added? Do you add to the experience? I call those throw-ins, something that gets added for kind of good measure. One of the ones, and it's counterintuitive, it's called sampling, Ben.
Okay.
Now we think about sampling. I'm a big like Costco fan. You know, you go and you sample different things. And typically we think about sampling as something that we do for a prospective customer, right? Give them that little taste to bring them in.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Why can't you use that same technique on the customers you already have? Right? And so here's the thing. Your customers that work with you, Studies have shown that of 100% of what you can do for them, on average, they know about 20%. So why wouldn't you give them a little taste or a sample of something else that you can provide? So one of my favorite examples in the entire project comes from the Twin Cities. And it's an ice cream shop in St. Paul, Minnesota. It's called Izzy's Ice Cream.
Okay.
And Jeff Summers, who opened it, when he got advice when he opened it, and this is what somebody told him, they said, two things you need to do. You need to smile, which is what you just said. Mm-hmm. And two, they said, you need to give away free samples.
Okay.
And he was like, I'm not up for just giving away ice cream. So this is the genius of Jeff Summers. Jeff decided that when you went into his shop and you ordered a scoop of ice cream, he would let you pick another flavor for free. And he would give you this little mini scoop that went on top of your big scoop.
Okay.
And that mini scoop was called the Izzy's.
The Izzy's.
And Izzy. And the ice cream shop is called Izzy's Ice Cream. And it's just, I mean, think about it. We've all been to an ice cream shop. Like, it's such a painstaking thing because you don't want to pick a bad flavor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you may hesitate to like try something new. Well, what a great technique that he has. You order a scoop of ice cream, you get this little mini scoop on top. You order two scoops of ice cream, you get two Izzy's on top. And I just think that's a brilliant way that you can give your current customers a little something extra.
I'm imagining that as almost like a metaphor for someone's trying to bargain with you and decrease the value of something that, if anything, you could raise your price, and they want to bargain and get a cheaper price on your product and service. Let's add an Izzy. Let's add something that wasn't already included. I'm not going to negotiate on price, but I'm happy to add, in what we're calling here an Izzy, an extra piece of service that maybe wouldn't have been included, instead of negotiating on price. So adding value. And in this case, it's not like a negotiation. It's adding value before anyone ever even asked.
Right. And here's the thing. 70% of people buy based on the experience.
Okay.
30% buy solely on what? Price.
Mm-hmm.
And given the choice, it could be 50-50, right? Just happens to be in this case that it's 70-30. I would never, ever want to try to compete on price. It's a race to the bottom.
Sure.
And so I love, not only in doing that something, are you standing out on the experience that you provide? You're providing something that makes you different from all of your competition. And you're giving people a reason to talk about you. The concept, and just for background of why the colors. Cool. So the first one was purple. The second one was green. The third one was gold. Now, to be honest, I had no clue this was even going to be beyond the one book. But the reason why it was purple and purple goldfish is that purple, green, and gold are the colors of Mardi Gras.
Huh, okay.
And there's a word that comes from New Orleans that exemplifies this idea of going beyond just the transaction, right? So a lot of business is transactional. It's, to your point, it's haggling over the price. It's trying to get more for less, right? It's this push and pull. And it's like a zero-sum game.
Hmm.
And so this concept of lagniappe, which comes from New Orleans, dates all the way back to the 1800s. And lagniappe is the concept of a little something extra. So it was commonplace that if you did business down in New Orleans, that the business would do a little something more to honor the relationship. Something that was kind of thrown in for good measure. And I love that because you're going be above and beyond the transaction to do something to honor the relationship. And it's an amazing word, Lanyap. Mark Lanyap. Twain, in his autobiography, Ben, he said, Lanyap was a word worth traveling all the way to New Orleans to get. And it's, it, to me, it's, there's not enough that of that in business today.
You know, it's this Lanyap. It reminds me of an example that I'm going to look silly talking about this, but I'm big into the music scene, was in the music industry for a while, and I'd be late night at a bar. And I used to tell people, I called it the cheerleader approach. When a bartender was pouring your beverage, you need to cheer them on. You need to make them feel good, like, yeah, pour, oh, oh, oh. And then they would pour thicker pours because of the encouragement you were providing them.
Right.
And then once in a while, and it honestly was the higher end, some of the more snotty bars like dress code, this or that, they would use these little tiny like 1 ounce pouring measurers. So no matter what you ordered, they'd pour it. And I remember watching them pour it into this little pour and make my $12 drink that only has one shot with it. And I can't do the cheerleader approach. And I really disliked that because me personally at the time, really got emotional value from just getting more for just they were over exceeding my expectations. And a lot of times it was like a divey, fun kind of local place and not the high end things that actually had the most people coming in for those very reasons. So guys, I am an alcoholic. I'll say it, but I don't drink like that every night, but I called it the cheerleader approach. And I never quite realized until this moment why it was so joyful. And it was because they were providing an experience and honestly giving me control of that experience as well. When I couldn't do that and it was measured and formulaic, I felt like just another transaction versus someone there to have a fantastic time with the bartender and the people around.
Right.
Me.
To have a little bit of an experience, right? It kind of goes both ways. You know, people will challenge me and they go, well, you do these little things. Does it really make a big difference, Stan? Like, yeah, it feels good for the employee to do, you know, to do that little something extra. Mm-hmm. It feels good when you get it as a customer. And one of my favorite, there was a study that was done a number of years ago in New York, and they wanted to measure the impact of a couple simple things, Ben. So they wanted to measure the impact of you being greeted when you walked in, like warmly greeted. And two, if you received a small gift. And so here was the key. It was that they did it at, they call it a QSR, like a fast food establishment. And so here was the gift. It was either like a little keychain, mm-hmm. or it was like a small little thing of yogurt, and they would greet you and give you the yogurt before you ordered food. And so the idea was to measure the impact of these two small little things. And so there were four groups that they measured. The control group didn't get anything.
Okay.
Then there was the greeting group. They got greeted, but they didn't get the gift. Then there was the gifting group, right? They got the gift, but they didn't get the greeting when they walked in. And then there was the one that got both. And so I'm doing it off the top of my head.
Kind of like cracks me up that they have a group that they didn't get the greeting, but they got the gift. So someone there's just standing there handing out the gift without explaining things. That's
yeah.
Silly
so
to me,
again, but... they probably did it over the course of the day or a few days. But someone there was a certain amount of people that came in that just got greeted, but didn't get anything. And so what they found was that if you didn't get the greeting or the gift, on average, you ordered $7.11 worth of food.
Hmm.
Right? Now, if you got greeted when you came in, that jumped to $8.39. Right? If you got the gift, but you didn't get the greeting. It jumped up to $9.39.
Okay.
Which makes no sense to me, especially if you give me a yogurt. Wouldn't that impact the amount of food that I would order? Yeah, it impacts that you order more. And then here was the kicker. If you got both the greeting and the gift, it jumped to $10.41.
Wow.
So 7-Eleven was like the baseline.
Yeah.
10.41 was when you got both. That's a 46% increase in sales.
I was going to say.
And here's the thing. When they talked to those people that got both, their likelihood to recommend was bigger. Their overall satisfaction was greater. So people ask me, do little things make a big difference? Like, would I actually pick a hotel merely because I get a warm chocolate chip cookie when I check in? And the answer is absolutely yes.
Absolutely. And the labor cost really isn't much. Obviously, there's the product of the yogurt, the product of the cookie.
Right.
But the labor cost is virtually the same. And you're getting a 40-some percent increase per customer. Plus, if they're referring other people,
right?
I don't even want to try to do the math of how much more you'll make over the span of 5, 10, 20 years.
I saw someone do a really good job. So there, I was in California a few years ago, and I went to a QSR, and it was like a fast casual, like healthy, like a pita, almost like a pita grill type of place. And I'll never forget it. You know, it's type of thing like a bistro style. You order your stuff and then like you get a number and then they walk it out to your table. Right. And I noticed very quickly that there were two different colors of the numbers. And so they asked me, and a lot of places will do this. Have you dined with us? Have you been here before?
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't. Right. And I got a green number, whereas I noticed somebody who had been there before got a red number.
I've heard of this.
Now, before I left, the manager came over and had a little brownie that was in a little, you know, container or whatever, and gave it to me, asked me about my meal, said, "Hey, we enjoyed having you here today. Here's a little something on behalf of the restaurant." And I thought, God, that is so smart, right? You never get a second chance to make that first impression.
Right.
Yeah.
When I first heard that story, and I think it was in a different form, literally like my mind was blown, the floodgates of ideas. Cause if you think about it, so you could even do, we'll use the restaurant. You could do napkin. You can fold napkins in two ways. And if they're a new customer, you could give them a certain kind of folded napkin. And then everybody in the staff's trained. And as they stop by, they, you know, say hello, they smile, they say goodbye when the people leave. And the customer, and it doesn't have to be a restaurant, and it doesn't have to be a napkin, the customer has no clue that there's a system behind this.
Right.
But everybody's jumping on board to provide an incredible experience because they know. And it makes me think, and we could brainstorm all day, every business is going to look different.
Right.
What is our color? What is our fancy folded napkin where we can notify the team quickly and have like our own language that we know this is a new customer. We're going to over deliver. And it means nothing about how you treat your current customers. You're already kicking ass with them. But if we know they're a new customer, how can we cue each other to over deliver so that first experience kicks butt?
Right. Yeah, I mean,
love the idea.
It's the same thing. It's, you know, the word for it is onboarding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you onboard? We think of onboarding more so from like a new employee perspective. And part of my books talk about the employee experience and engagement. But here's the thing. People make a decision very quickly when they're visiting, you know, an establishment or starting a new job, whether or not they're going to come back and stay for the long term. And so how you manage that first impression is absolutely key. I would also tell you, you know, before somebody walks out the door, or logs off your site or hangs up the phone, how you manage that last impression, absolutely key.
Hmm. We remember the start and the end more than the middle, right?
And maybe they, you know, primarily Daniel Kahneman, who's a behavioral economist, great book called Thinking Fast and Slow. Kahneman would say, you tend to remember the peak. So either the best part or the worst part, we tend to remember the peak. And then he says, you tend to remember the end. So he calls it the peak end rule.
Hmm.
So what are you doing to create that peak? Again, how are you giving, what's your word of mouth strategy to provide that signature differentiator? And so that's, you know, everything I've done over the last 10 years, there's been different topics that I've tackled as part of it. And I've had a ton of co-authors. So that's helpful when you're writing multiple books. I've partnered with people that were subject matter experts in areas that I'm not. Because I saw the importance of some areas. It's, you know, how are you creating that experience that people are going to talk about?
Yeah, that special experience everyone's going to talk about. And so, Stan, usually I close out with a rapid fire round, but we're going to be different this episode and skip it because this is pure value and we haven't really dived into Pink Goldfish yet.
Yeah, I'm curious. What was your biggest takeaway from reading Pink 2.0?
Yes. So, and I want to talk about Flossom in a moment. Just, and I'll say it in my own words, just the fact that our flaws truly are what make us different. They're what make us awesome. Right. Here, I actually have it written down somewhere. So, Ben Albert's top weaknesses, because this was an exercise in Pink Goldfish.
Yeah, there's an assessment. I love it. Hit me.
My top weaknesses is I'm very rebellious. I'm very radical.
Right.
I'm vulnerable. I can be emotional. I can be silly or immature.
Right.
I'm small. And quite literally, I was the smallest. I tell the story all the time. I was the smallest kid in school, but I wanted to be a basketball player. But right. Since I got beat up and bullied so much, I have that empathy and that curiosity and that growth mindset that I would have never had if I wasn't the small kid getting bullied. I'm very impulsive. I'm a little ADHD in my impulsiveness. Right. And the last thing I wrote down from that exercise is I'm a bit regular. I'm a bit ordinary. I don't stand out from the crowd.
Right.
But that's quite all right because a lot of the businesses I work with are small to medium sized service based businesses, and they're not there to maybe put on a pink suit, but right. They're there to show a lot of businesses. I say this, this is kind of a side note, feel like a lot of businesses provide incredible service, but then if you Google search them, it looks like they show up to work in their pajama pants. So I don't need right. to make them look like they're in a pink suit, but we can make right. them look suit and tie ready to go. So those are my weaknesses. And what I learned in Pink Goldfish is these so-called weaknesses, if we flaunt them, if we own them, if we acknowledge them, and if anything, use them as a lesson as to why we provide service. I love the one that I'm not, but cheap. If you're cheap, tell people you're cheap. Don't go right. off talk, say I'm a boutique marketing firm. No, just tell them you're cheap. Right. So that's right. some of the things I learned. But tell me, so Pink Goldfish and Flossom, give right. us like a bird's eye umbrella view of what Flossom is or react to any of the stuff I just said to give it some context here.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you did that assessment because it really, it forces you to look at both your weaknesses and your strengths.
Right.
And then you did the assessment where you realize that every weakness has what? A corresponding strength to it. And so I feel, you know, society, we tend to try to fit in and we live by the norms of whether it's our industry or, you know, where we live, and we try to conform. And a lot of times that means we try to correct the things that are unique about us to try to fit in. And again, what we realize is, and the book shows this, is that every weakness has a corresponding strength, and that what makes us weird Like, what makes us weird, unique, and different is truly what makes us wonderful. And you almost want to spell wonderful with a O-N-E as opposed to a W-O-N, right?
Okay.
It makes us stand out. And so David, and I, all credit to David, he wears head to toe pink. He's 6'6". He's like, you'll never forget when you've heard this guy speak. He's an amazing speaker. He really has spent a lot of time. He's got a great book called The Freak Factor.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw what he did from an individual perspective. And I said, that same reasoning applies in marketing. And we studied over 400 organizations. Essentially, like I said, 10 ways in purple, there's 8 ways that you can do it from a pink perspective. So it's flaunting, lopsiding, antagonizing, withholding, swerving, opposing, micro-weirding, and exposing. And it's just the 8 different ways. It's, you know, 400 companies that have achieved competitive separation. We really broke them down. You can speak to this. Easy read, a lot of fun stories in it.
Yeah.
Great assessment. And my hope is people walk away going, look, I'm enough. And maybe what I need to do is lean in and do more of what maybe I perceive as a weakness.
Mm.
And that's the message of pink.
In just a moment, we'll give a homework assignment for everybody as soon as they're done with this podcast. We have a hard stop. I feel bad. Will you come back if I'll have you back? I'd love to have you back, really.
I would love to do a part two. So give him the homework assignment.
Because this time flew by. I blew through Pink Goldfish, not because I was rushing for this, because I was hooked to it. And I love the case stories and I love the examples. And we didn't dive deep on that. So maybe next time we'll go a little deeper on specifically Flossom and what it is. Before the homework assignment, what are you working on right now and how do we support it?
I appreciate it. The last color in the series, the 11th color, is the black goldfish. And you get the color black when you combine all of the other colors into the mix. And so to call it like the greatest hits is not the right thing, but it's just really a culmination of what I've learned over the last 13 years as I've been on this journey. And I'll leave you with one of the things I'm proud of that book is I wrote kind of a manifesto. Mm. It's not a long manifesto, but here it is. Your brand today is no longer what you tell people it is. It is the differentiated experience your employees deliver. It's what you stand for and how your customers feel. And most importantly, your brand is what your customers and employees tell others about their experience. All else is derivative of that and only that.
Powerful.
Yeah.
Before the homework, tell us how we follow up and read black, read pink, read purple, read the whole series, get to know you better. Where should we go?
Yeah. So I spend a majority of my time on LinkedIn. So catch me on LinkedIn. I write almost every day there under the hashtag the1299 and stanphelps.com is the best place to catch up with me.
Cool, gang. That'll be in the show notes description. Real quick, Stan. So I grab my pencil. I'm ready to take a quick note here. Give us a homework assignment. So we understand our flaws can make us awesome. They're part of what differentiate ourselves. How do we start owning that in our business? And not all of us are business owners, but just how do we start owning that in our career starting today?
So here's the thing. There's a great saying, you cannot see the label when you're sitting inside the jar.
Hmm.
So the first, if you remember, the first step in the pink goldfish journey is what we call the aware phase. It's the first of 6 A's, but it's asking other people, what makes us different? Why do you do business with us? Right? And trying to get that, you know, ask your employees, why do you work here? You've worked other places. How are we different? What makes us unique? And that's the great, I think, puts you on the journey to kind of see yourself from others' perspective.
Love it. Stan, we'll do a part two. I release you. Thank you for coming on the show. It's been such a pleasure.
Thanks. Have a great day, Ben.
You thanks again for listening to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. You need to go subscribe if you haven't yet. This show is completely free. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right. Thanks once more for listening to LST. I am so grateful. Talk to you soon.